But the conditions we are experiencing now were actually caused by our behavior in the period leading up to 2015. In other words, we could have saved ourselves. We could have saved ourselves, but we didn't. It's amazing. What state of mind were we in to face extinction and simply shrug it off?
101 degrees Fahrenheit. It's the hottest day ever recorded.
700 people are now feared dead after the strongest ever recorded day's rainfall in India's history.
Now it's official. The past year has been the driest in Melbourne's history.
The desert is advancing at the phenomenal rate of 3 miles every year.
Dozens of Antarctic ice shelves collapsing faster than anyone predicted.
18 countries are underwater and 1.5 million people are affected.
It is our fault. After years of debate, some of the world's top scientists...
Unequivocal is the word they use. Human activity is...
contributing to changes in our Earth's climate.
And that issue is no longer up to debate.
Despite all the efforts to control pollution and its effect on our climate, the level of greenhouse gas emissions has reached a record high and shows no signs of being reversed.
Despite the Kyoto Treaty and all the talk of reducing emissions of carbon dioxide, levels of this key greenhouse gas are rising faster than ever.
We had an unspoken collective pact to pretend climate change wasn't happening, as though as long as we ignored it hard enough, it wouldn't be true.
Hi folks, I'm Martin. Welcome to Kaput Radio. Let's get into this struggle faced since Copenhagen 2009 and now again sounding even more gloomy from the recent Rio 20 Plus meeting. What's at the heart of this economic impasse when it comes to environmental costs? Take the academics that point out the dangers of global warming with their books and lectures but can only blame the lack of funding apparently caused by crazy economists and politicians. They cannot see the basic flaw in the method how we create money, all money.
If you remember one single number above all else, make it 2 degrees. Now everyone in the world pretty much, the European Union, big multinational corporations, Greenpeace, political parties, all agree that we have to stabilise global temperatures within 2 degrees above pre-industrial levels. And the reason for that is because if you cross that threshold, then there are tipping points in the Earth system which could drive the warming process essentially out of control. But crucially, to keep the temperature rise within 2 degrees, this point of stabilisation needs to be at around 2015.
Throughout our history, the deal was we left the world in a better place than we found it. That was progress. The wheel, the rule of law, penicillin. It was our covenant to our children and grandchildren. My children weren't angry with me for breaking the covenant. They were too busy trying to stay alive to waste energy on blame, trying to negotiate their way through food riots, refugee camps, the collapse of society. But I think my grandchildren would have been angry had they survived into adulthood.
Skiing in the desert. Heating the air. Lighting empty offices. Energy is so ridiculously cheap, it makes perfect economic sense to just put it away. China is the new bad guy, because they are building a new power station every 4 days. But a quarter of that energy makes stuff for us. Western companies pay Chinese workers crap wages to make crap plastic toys, then ship them to Europe and wrap them in more plastic. Punters drive to the out-of-town megastore in their gas guzzlers. Plastic toy in plastic box goes into plastic bag. 2 days later, toy is broken and back it goes to a Chinese landfill where it stays for about, 50,000 years? 800 times more energy wasted and 10,000 times more expensive for you. It's a tricky decision.
When industries have to compete as a direct consequence of the method used to create money, they cannot put themselves at a disadvantage with, say, a carbon tax or other mechanisms which raise the production costs against other countries' industries who themselves will travel on the cheapest road to produce at the expense of people and the environment because of the resulting mandatory competition on the global market, again, caused by the method of money creation.
that's a signal that basically the Earth is destabilising. And all the norms that have allowed life to exist as it has done are changing.
We talk about sustainability.
Lots of ideas have tried to take over the world, but there's only one winner. 3,000 adverts bombard us every day. Telling us we'll be happier, more attractive and with better skin if only we buy their products. Together, they create within us an insatiable desire to buy more and more stuff. Americans have been advertised at longest, and they now each consume twice as much energy as a European, 9 times more than a Chinese person, 15 times more than an Indian, and 50 times more than someone from Kenya. If all 6.5 billion people here on Earth consumed like Europeans or Japanese, we'd need 2 more planets worth of resources. If everyone consumed like Americans, Australians and Canadians, we'd need another 4. And in 2040 or so, when there's about 9 billion of us, we'll need 2 more again. Capitalism's only goal is ever-expanding growth. But ever-expanding growth on just the one not-expanding planet is impossible. The current economic system is disastrous, not just for the planet, but for most people too. 400 years of capitalism has allowed the richest 1% to take 40% for themselves, leaving just 1% for the poorest half. But anyone wanting to live differently is thwarted at every turn. With profit the only measuring stick, destroying the planet is written into the system, and runaway climate change is a not very surprising result.
Went to war in Iraq. According to former Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan, it's simple. 3-letter answer, not WMD, it's OIL.
I am saddened that it's politically inconvenient to acknowledge what everyone knows, that the Iraq war is largely about oil.
You might read the ex-chairman of Shell that said over the weekend that oil could hit over $150 a barrel as world production begins to peak. Not really good news for a country whose entire economy, not to mention its entire way of life, is based on cheap oil.
Oil was formed when ancient plant life in the oceans absorbed energy from the ancient sun. As these plants died, they settled on the ocean floor, along with the dead bodies of tons and tons of ocean creatures. Over the millennia, temperatures increased, and the organic matter was gradually cooked until the sun's energy was stored inside oil. 150 million years later, Shell's geologists analyze where the oil might be, then drill 3 miles down into the seabed to collect samples.
Thanks for your time.
Good to be talking to you. Good evening.
Now, this oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, can you tell us what happened?
Yes, we're talking about an offshore oil rig, which is, of course, a large device for pumping oil out of an oil field under the sea floor.
Sure. And what happens if something goes wrong?
Well, we're trying to figure that out at the moment.
No, I mean before you start. What are the regulations for dealing with that problem?
You're not going to have a problem before you start.
Yeah, but what are the regulations?
The what?
Regulations.
Can you Google something for me quickly? Relegations?
No, regulations.
Regulations? Well, Google them both.
This is before you start.
No, you're not going to have an accident before you start. I mean, it's starting that causes the problem. There is no problem before you start. It's beautiful before you start.
So you're saying is that the accidents only happen when you get going?
That's the rule.
So what happened?
Well, in this case, there was a large explosion. The rig caught fire. 20 million gallons of crude oil spilled into the sea, and then the rig sank. I mean, everything happened.
So what did you do?
Well, first things first, obviously. The first thing to do in an event like that is to underestimate the problem.
What? Underestimate the problem? Why,
yes,
why would
because
you do
we
that?
Don't want people to panic. I mean, you've got to calm people down. A lot of people get very worried.
Why do they get worried?
Well, because the sea is filling with oil. A lot of people are very sentimental about the sea.
But understating the problem, surely not a solution.
Well, no, not to that problem, but first things first.
So what was solution number two?
Solution number two was to acknowledge the magnitude of the problem, but to point out that it's certainly not BP's fault. This is not our fault.
Whose fault is it?
I don't know, someone else, the bloke who built the wing nuts or something.
The solution doesn't sound very good.
That wasn't one of our better ones, but the next one was brilliant. We dropped a kind of shopping centre over the hole.
An underwater shopping centre?
Underwater shopping centre. We fitted it over the hole.
And did that work?
No, but it was a brilliant idea.
In what sense was it brilliant?
Oh, we know that doesn't work. We won't be trying that again.
What was the fourth solution?
Fourth solution is to offer to help with the cleanup. We can help there.
Hang on a second. How do you mean help? Shouldn't you be doing the cleanup? I mean, well, you're the one getting the oil out of the ocean.
We're not getting the oil out of the ocean. That's useless, that oil. How do you get oil out of the sea? We've been trying for a week. You can't be done.
It's useless. Okay, so what about the fifth solution?
Fifth solution was to pump mud down into the hole.
What with?
Well spotted. You see, that's the problem there. Ultimately, of course, relief wells is the thing we're going to have to build. And relief wells. Drill relief wells.
And when can you do that?
August.
Anything in the meantime?
Well, we've gone with a democratic solution in the meantime, which is nice.
What's a democratic solution?
Well, blame the president.
For causing the largest oil spill in U.S. history.
Bad mistake. People hate it.
But
people absolutely hate it.
But he didn't do it.
Well, he didn't prevent it, did he? I mean, have a look out there.
Thanks for your time.
He didn't prevent it, pardon?
Thanks for your time.
Regulations. No, it won't be measured in barrels. I think it's a different concept altogether. I've never heard of it either, but keep bloody looking.
Go back a few thousand years, and the energy available to grow our crops or feed animals was limited by the daily sunlight falling on the earth. But now we use the energy equivalent to hundreds of years of sunlight every single year. Every part of modern life is now literally made of oil, from CDs and plastic bags to medicine and computers, from clothes and carpets to cosmetics and cell phones. It's truly a wonderful and necessary substance. Then there's our food. Each calorie we eat uses nearly 100 oil calories to produce, package, refrigerate, transport. And fossil fuel-produced fertilizers now feed a couple of billion or so people who could not otherwise be sustained. It would be prudent for humanity to carefully use the remaining oil to build a new society run without it. Instead, we're burning up tens of millions of barrels every day, so it will be gone. It will run out, leaving pretty much none for future generations. Even though we in the oil industry are working our asses off looking for and finding this magical substance.
You smell it, and you know, it's greasy and, you know, ugly and smells so much like money. It's just beautiful, you know.
A dying Chevron executive is excited to one day become oil. The entire 144-minute cut of this week's review is available now for just $11.99 on Laserdisc.
Why are American cities designed so it's almost impossible not to have a car? Why were 100 railways in cities like New York, Philadelphia, and Los Angeles bought up and then deliberately destroyed? Why did the electric car get scrapped? Why were we, along with Australia, the only two countries not to sign the original Kyoto Climate Treaty? Why was an oil company lobbyist allowed to change official government reports on global warming? Why was the same PR firm employed by the tobacco industry to persuade the public that smoking is healthy, then employed by the oil industry to convince us there was still doubt about climate change? Alternative energy has been available for 50 years. Why have we barely used it? Why were solar panels taken off the White House? Because, right from the early days of the industry, the oil men and their obscene profits have had an unhealthy influence on the people running our country. And now, they are the people running our country. And they're providing the cash, too. Oil business isn't just in bed with the government. It is the government.
Many videos and stories devoted to these problems cover some misconceptions and plain wrong statements. But most of all, they convey an impression of some people being at fault, being greedy, being power-hungry, and so forth. In the media, the very destructive element, the mandatory profit-seeking, is presented as a choice, when there can be no choice, no win-win, no charitable redistribution of money unless it is profitable to do so. It means that actually our main economic effort is to produce a profit product, which whatever product or service being employed. Chasing the profit is the main survival game.
I'd like to thank everybody for coming. You have many education choices, and we're all grateful at the WTO that you have chosen to listen to us for an hour and to our messages about things that will impact everyone. I'd like to say that by joining us here, you're essentially embarking with us on a mission. I'd like to start right at the beginning. As I was saying, trade liberalization is a project of faith. It's a crusade. And in any crusade, there are problems. There are invading armies, there are big blockades. And one of the problems that we run into in this crusade is starvation in the third world. You may recognize that symbol from those green bins you see, you know, where cans, bottles, blah, blah. The kind of recycling I'm talking about that we have developed at the WTO is Not really this irrelevant kind of recycling, where the target, individual consumers like you and me, or of non-edible industrial products, is such a tiny part of the problem. Rather, we're talking about really recycling what counts, where it counts. To begin to understand the theory behind this, you must first realize that the human body is not really very efficient. When ingesting heavy foods, only about 20% of the nutrients are absorbed by the alimentary passageway, while the other 80% finds itself expelled in post-consumer byproducts. Already 20 years ago, NASA scientists began to tap into this nutritional gold mine by developing filters that could transform their astronauts' waste into healthy, hygienic, and even delicious food once again. With the use of this technology, a single hamburger, for example, can be eaten more than 10 times, providing a cumulative total of 3 times the nutritional value of the original fresh hamburger. Now again, a certain amount of cultural openness is required as we investigate solutions. And I'd love to take any questions. Yes, you've been...
Coming from a third world country, I found most of what you said pretty offensive. It's as if everyone is equal, but some are more equal than others. And who is to say whether people in the third world want a burger?
You know, I in my heart sometimes find it to agree that cultures deserve equal consideration, perhaps to develop on their own terms. But, you know, we're different. We're culturally different. We're rich, they're poor. This is the most humane solution we can come up with that stays within the market logic.
If it's all right, I could answer a portion of that question as well. And this answers the question about desire for the product, because the biggest growth areas are the developing world. And so, in fact, people do want the product. We do have a kind of video presentation about this that I came prepared to show. It's not, the program isn't actually completely ready yet. So as you can see here, there's a consumer in the first world entering McDonald's and consuming a hamburger. And afterward, this is a process we're all familiar with. I don't need to explain it to anyone. But, you see, it's rendered out in this style because studies have shown that consumers are most responsive to 3D animation right now, particularly in developing cultures. So as you can see, it goes through a piping system, a kind of, and this isn't unusual. We do this for oil. We could do this for food as well. And as you can see, it goes back up through the plumbing and emerges in a McDonald's. Now, the part of this video that isn't completed yet is the filtering process. There will be a very well-rendered filtering. And as you can see, that might answer somebody's question from before, but at the McDonald's in a developing country, and in fact in this country as well, you'd be able to choose the number one, number two, number three, number four, number five would no longer refer to combinations of food, but rather just the number of times the product had been recycled. We're lucky to be able to partner with the World Trade Organization, which you know, has slightly different goals. Of course, McDonald's goals are to profit and grow. And we hope that we can provide a nutritious and tasty product in the process.
Our goals are to help McDonald's profit and grow and all other corporations. So.
I think you guys, like the WTO, is kind of lacking kind of like a human element, you know? Like, yeah. if you saw, have you ever seen starving people?
In pictures, yes.
Okay, but tell me, if you saw somebody starving to death, you would probably think, a lot, you know, like, that would kind of hit you in a sensitive, you know, place to say, like, oh, well, you know, maybe markets and money and this and that don't really mean as much, and actually, like, feeding people means a little bit more, you know?
Yeah. Well, it is true that there's a personal side of it that, I have to say, in the WTO, there are questions that we have about this as human beings, but we're not as subject, we have a kind of firmer grasp on theory. We are able, fortunately, to simply direct world trade in a much more theoretical way in collaboration with our colleagues at the largest corporations. So You know, yes, probably if I went to these countries, I'd think about things a little differently, perhaps, but at the same time, I don't think I would forget all my schooling. I don't think I would forget, you know, all these theories and so on. So perhaps one day I'll do that.
This is a moneymaker, correct?
Yes. Well, it's a moneymaker, starvation solver. Sure.
And how much does McDonald's pay you to come here and speak this garbage to us?
Did I see a mouse with an ear growing out of its back? Yeah. How are you going to get around the cultural and legal implications of cannibalism and basically asking us to recycle shit?
I think there's no ethical behavior. I mean, you don't have morals. That's what I think. I mean, you're committed. That's all. I mean, I can't believe the corporate world is run by you guys.
The reality is that we already treat people in the third world far worse than we treat our domestic animals. That's it's not saying it's right. It's just saying that's the reality.
Why are American cities designed so it's almost impossible not to have a car? Why were 100 railways in cities like New York, Philadelphia, and Los Angeles bought up and then deliberately destroyed? Why did the electric car get scrapped? Why were we, along with Australia, the only two countries not to sign the original Kyoto Climate Treaty? Why was an oil company lobbyist allowed to change official government reports on global warming? Why was the same PR firm employed by the tobacco industry to persuade the public that smoking is healthy, then employed by the oil industry to convince us there was still doubt about climate change? Alternative energy has been available for 50 years. Why have we barely used it? Why were solar panels taken off the White House? Because, right from the early days of the industry, the oil men and their obscene profits have had an unhealthy influence on the people running our country. And now, they are the people running our country. And they're providing the cash, too. Oil business isn't just in bed with the government. It is the government.
How is money created? Where does it come from? Who benefits? And what purpose does it serve?
What is a money system? What is the money behind the money system?
For centuries, the mechanics of the monetary system have remained hidden in the prying eyes of the populace. Yet its impact, both on a national and international level, is perhaps unsurpassed. Today, as these very foundations are being shaken by crises, the need for open and honest dialogue on the future of the monetary system has never been greater.
This economic crisis is like a cancer. If you just wait and wait thinking this is going to go away, just like a cancer, it's going to grow and it's going to be too late. What I would say to everybody is get prepared. This is not a time right now to wishful thinking the government is going to sort things out. The governments don't rule the world. Goldman Sachs rules the world.
There's no coincidence that boom and bust started to become a real cyclical issue around about the 1700s when William Paterson founded the Bank of England.
This documentary will investigate and explain this ever-changing system and the impact it has both on a national and international level.
You know, money is the center of the economy. If you don't understand where it comes from, who creates it, and when it gets created, then how can you understand the entire economy? You hear politicians and journalists saying, you know, we've been living beyond our means, we've become dependent on debt, we need to rein in our spending and live within our means. It's not possible in the current system. You know, the reason why everybody's in debt now is not because they've been recklessly borrowing. We haven't borrowed all this money from, you know, an army of pensioners who've been saving up their whole lives. Money in the current system is debt. You know, it's created when banks make loans. So the only way in the current system that we can have any money in the economy, you know, the only way we can have money for business to trade is if we've borrowed it all from the banks.
Why do we need money? The answer can be told in 1,000 words or just one: survival. So there is no choice. Do we like to be altruistic, charitable, help each other and the planet? Can we be cooperative as a species? Yes, we can. So why are we not conducting ourselves that way? Money is scarce and hard fought over. We have been brainwashed to accept this as an unquestionable reality. Second, why is money always scarce? Because it is created in a process as a hired financial tool, not your money to spend, but a device, a sum of money you can only use to produce a profit with whatever else in the real market you produce. This hired finance is always a lesser amount than required to pay for the hiring and subsequent production in the economy, which immediately means two things. A, you must find an external market, another country's market, to obtain the required profit, since the domestic market is short on the sums due to the addition of the hiring fee, the interest and charges. It also poses a potential element of conflict to fight over scarce export market share. B, it introduces competition where win-win is a fantasy and doesn't exist. We have been successfully brainwashed into us accepting this destructive element. We are completely convinced that competition is not only desirable but even natural. Mistaking an early concept of Darwinian evolution of species by competition and survival of the fittest, however, that evolutionary survival of species is largely achieved by cooperative behavior, not competition. Thirdly, we also love superstition. Whenever a perceived threat appears, we love the breaches of irrationality. We like to find culprits, sacrificial lambs, and like to blame others, burn the preachers when things don't go well. That doesn't help the understanding of the issue one bit. Let's keep that stuff with the crazies. The method to create money has never been sufficiently recognized. One cannot reform a system which exists by agreement on a method largely unrecognized as the cause for all the subsequent effects. That system. 5. One last thing I'd like to ask you. For all purposes of goodwill, cooperative behavior to help each other, save the planet from environmental ruin, solve the armed conflicts in the world, address poverty and be really good, what are we missing? Resources? They are not scarce, especially if we only produce what we really need. Employ new technologies and renewable energy, what is missing? When we want to solve social and health problems, what is missing? It's not skills, it's not lacking resources, it is lacking money, and so forth. Most problems can be solved once the funding is available. The only thing in the end really missing is money.
This crisis that we've been in, for me, is an urban crisis in lots of ways, and it's very much connected with the model of urbanization that has sustained capitalism since 1945. What's happened since 1945 in the United States is the United States has got out of depression, recession conditions by building houses and filling them with things. And it's done it through suburbanization, and the like. Now, where did this crisis we're in come from? It came from a subprime crisis in housing.
You heard samples from a video called Age of Stupid, also samples from a video called 97% on monetary reform, though there is nothing to be reformed. Satirist Clark and Dore, an excerpt of The Onion News, David Harvey, and also other details are all stated on the program page of this show at radioforall.net. My name is Martin. You can find other Kaput X Radio programs also at radioforall.net. And I think I'll catch you all again soon.